Good evening, everybody. Ooh, I should have cleared my throat a little better for that one. You are listening or watching NJRR Live with Diane Moxley and Brian Powers. I'm Brian Powers. Diane Moxley's on her way in. She's trying to figure out some bugs or something like that on her computer. But I'm sure she'll be joining us here in our virtual studio. And unfortunately, as many of you know, who've been listening to the show for a while, for the past year and a half or so, even now, we've been doing regular shows from the coffee house on Amboy Avenue Edison once a month. It's been great fun. I mean, it's been nice. It gets a little bit bigger every time. It's become, you know, the regulars show up and we have a great cup of coffee and some decent food and we talk a little politics and do a podcast. So I've really enjoyed that. And that's just one way, you know, millions and millions of lives are changing right now in a really big way as this COVID-19 pandemic continues to accelerate and continues to impact everybody. I mean, just everybody on the planet at this point, I think, is some way or another been affected by this disease. So we're going to have our good comrade, Lori Endicott Thomas, author of No More Measles, The Truth About Vaccinations, and a very, very, very profound medical writer, talk to us about, you know, how we can learn from history a little bit and maybe start to do better and better. The response, of course, from all levels has been slow to the going, but I think maybe over the last 48 hours, I think people are starting to get to it. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Before we go, I want to remind you can go to You can go to www.njrevolutionradio.com/donate to make a contribution. What we do here is generated by people, and we need a lot more people to continue and to ramp up production. You've noticed this year we've got new graphics. We were supposed to have some new events. We'll get to that later on in the show. But we've done a lot more, and it's all generated by your contributions, helping people work. So we've always said, and as a union guy, I'm always going to tell you that labor has value, and we want to make sure that we continue to staff the show and continue to get the hard work done, producing New Jersey Revolution Radio Live, producing Wine, Women, and Revolution, producing, you know, the events that we do around the state, getting out and doing more live streaming, really important work that we're doing. Not many people here are doing it. We're going to talk about the importance of independent media in our second segment. But right now, I'm going to bring in, he comes here at least once a month. He usually, at least. Do you have a cup of coffee with you at least?
Not today. No, sorry.
Christian Perez is joining us from his very comfortable home.
Live at the Castle Perez here in the great city of Tinton Falls, New Jersey.
Beautiful, beautiful area there. Beautiful area. What is Tinton Falls famous for?
I don't know. I think it's a very long, thin city. I've only lived here a couple of years, but it's connected to the parkway and Route 18. I can get to work and I can get to the coffee house really quickly.
Is that what you
know? We share a zip code with Shrewsbury. A lot of woods and deer. It's cool.
I think we've been talking a lot of marketing around New Jersey Revolution Radio. We've been throwing a lot of ideas, both to make fun of capitalism and to try to create a buzz. We've got a hashtag, thanks to the Eric Dawson Show. There's a hashtag plague stick, where I believe in marketing a 6-foot-long pointy stick to keep people away. And now you can market the city of Tinton Falls as the Long Thin City.
Long Thin City. We're next to Eatontown and Asbury Park.
It's catchy. I remember it. So, you know, usually once a month you come here, you update us on South America, which is its own disaster.
Oh, my God.
I mean, look, we have some time here to talk, but I mean, basically, we've had attempted coups in Venezuela, a real coup in Bolivia, right?
Absolutely.
And other areas, you've got a lunatic in Bolsonaro running Brazil. How do you pick a disaster to start with?
I think the best place to start, if Diane were here, she would probably ask me about Juan Guaido. So I say, let's start with Venezuela. Yeah. I think that's a good place to look at. This isn't about Juan Guaido specifically. This week or in the past week, the president of Venezuela, Maduro, asked for $5 billion in aid from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, to help fight the coronavirus. $5 billion because of U.S. sanctions. And the IMF told Venezuela no, that they will not be getting $5 billion in aid. This is the first time Venezuela has asked for aid from the IMF in 18 years. And the reason they were told no, the reason Venezuela will not receive $5 billion in aid to fight the coronavirus was because, well, they were told by the IMF that they don't know who the actual president is. They don't know if it's Maduro, who was democratically elected and has been in power and has the support of the people, or Guaido, who's still kind of just floating around. So, I mean, Guaido is now at this point, he's the linchpin. He's the one keeping his country from getting $5 billion in aid. So, I mean, the guy continues to be a national embarrassment. Idiot. He continues to be just a terrible human being. And, you know, the truth is being laid bare. And that's what's going on there.
He's
I mean, the guy's a national embarrassment.
He suggested to bomb his own country.
Yeah.
You imagine exactly. He suggested very early on when asked, is it cool if we bomb your country so that you can be president? He basically said, yeah, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
The guy's a tool.
And I'm important, so die.
Yeah. He's a tool. He's a low life. I mean, the guy is a liar. And, you know, we have him just, you know, basically just, like I said, getting in the way of his country's progress. Interestingly, that brings us to Bolivia. Bolivia did suffer a coup. Supported by the U.S. Interestingly, the same government that was, Morales a communist and criticizing his link to the Cubans, they just this week went begging the Cubans for aid in fighting the coronavirus because the Cubans were able to develop a treatment for the virus. They have this antiviral drug called interferon alpha 2B. It's being used by the Chinese to combat the coronavirus. It's used to combat HIV and it's used to combat hepatitis B and C. So Cuba currently has enough reserves of that medicine to take care of their population, but they've received messages not just from Bolivia, the same government that was denouncing them and calling them names not too long ago, as well as a number of countries throughout the world, including European countries. So if anybody ever asks what has Cuba done, what has China done, Cuba is currently saving lives against the coronavirus. While Donald Trump is seeking to block access to vaccine treatment by trying to what's the phrase? He's trying to keep the patent for it in the United States so that they could monetize it. The Cuban foreign secretary came out with a really good quote. I'm sorry. It was the foreign affairs minister. He said, these are times of solidarity, of understanding health as a human right, of strengthening international cooperation to face our common challenges, values that are key to humanistic practices of the revolution and of our people. So Cuba has decided they're going to help people out. The United States, there was a factoid that came out this week. The governor of Illinois got yelled at by someone in the White House because he called out Trump and Pence for their inaction on the coronavirus. So, I mean, we see Trump scrambling. A couple weeks ago, it was a hoax. Now we're seeing other countries stepping in to fill the void that we should be filling right now. Donald Trump's presidency has been a total disaster, and we're still bombing parts of Iraq. We still have sanctions on Iran, where hundreds of people have died as a result of the virus. Iran still cannot get medical equipment to fight the coronavirus because of the economic blockade and the sanctions we have on Iran. So despite that, Iran is still fighting the virus. There are Chinese in Iran. There are Chinese in Italy. Apparently, the Italians reached out asking for help, and the entire EU turned their backs on them. So China stepped in to fill that void. And there's also Cuban doctors in Italy who stepped in to fill that void. So Latin America has suffered the brunt of a lot of American capitalism, has suffered the brunt of imperialism. And again, despite all of those setbacks, is still a worldwide leader, or at least Cuba and Venezuela are, in fighting COVID-19. There are a number of Venezuelan doctors that are in Italy also helping out fighting the virus.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot, man. That's a lot of information, I can tell you.
It is a lot of information. I know I always try to do the brain dump on you guys, but it's a lot to get out.
It's great. It's great. I'm going to bring in, you know, while we're on the subject of COVID-19, we're going to bring into that discussion Lori Endicott Thomas, author of No More Measles, which you can buy on commizon.com, which is New Jersey Revolution Radio's new online store launched this week. We're doing some beta testing, and we're trying to help artists, help authors, and also, you know, build something that's sustainable, that can be here for the activist community. So I think it might have been in December. Lori's been on the show a number of times. She wrote a book called Don't Feed the Narcissists. She also wrote a book. What was the other one? It was about having a degree in liberal arts, right?
Oh, well, it's actually on incorporating the liberal arts into K-12 education.
Yes.
It's called Not Trivial.
Not Trivial. Yes. Yeah. So Lori's a wonderful author, and we thank her for joining here today. But she said, oh, you know, I got this book. You know, maybe we could sell it online. And that turned into a whole gigantic project. Without her really realizing what she had started, much like flicking a cigarette out into the woods on a dry leaves, it turned into a fire. And now we have an online store. So thanks, Lori, for that great idea. And if you'd like to take a look at her book, I really recommend reading it. The combination of public policy and science, I think, are the two keys to the solution. And Lori mixed that up in her book a while ago, but dealing with the present day, Lori, I've been trying to stay up in the news and take in a report every couple of hours to try and have the latest and greatest statistics about, you know, well, greatest, I shouldn't say, the latest statistics on this global pandemic. You know, what do you understand as what the current situation is regarding COVID-19?
Well, I have good news and bad news about the coronavirus. The good news is the structure of it, it's basically a set of genes wrapped in an oily envelope with proteins that stick out. And those proteins that stick out make it look like a crown when you look at it under an electron microscope. That's why that whole family of viruses is called coronaviruses. But that oily envelope that is part of that virus's structure is its weakness. That's why soap and water is a very good way to fight the coronavirus. So just washing your hands with soap and water is a very effective way of fighting coronavirus. So wash your hands. I mean, wash your hands well and use soap and water. If you don't have, if you're out and about and you don't have soap and water available, if you have some, you know, alcohol hand sanitizer, that is second best, but it's far better than nothing. But the main thing is you need to dismantle that virus before it gets onto your respiratory tract, because once it gets into your body, it's really hard to fight, and you have to wait until your immune system learns to recognize the bits of protein that come along with it, so that it can make antibodies to fight it. So in the meantime, stay away from people. Wash your hands. Those are the main things.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I got Diane on the other end there.
Oh, that's okay.
It's okay. I'm sure, you know, you gave us the update, and I do know the figures. And so it's spreading. What I understand about it spreading and what we can do to prevent it are those things. But on a government level, what have you seen from well, that said it all. Can I just move on to the next question?
Well, right now, and people are very prone to conspiracy theories about this, about anything like this, because they don't understand. They say, well, this is just the flu. No, it's not the flu. It's a coronavirus, yeah. Number one. And why this is such a bad epidemic is that it is potentially deadly in a lot of people, but it causes such a mild infection in so many people that a lot of people could be walking around spreading this without even realizing they're sick. And a lot of people who think they just have a mild cold could be spreading this. So a lot of young kids at school, or a lot of, you know, people in their 20s, they could be having this mild illness. I mean, you could die of it even if you're young. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get complacent. But the fact that you could have school age kids running around with just a runny nose, which a lot of them have a lot of the time anyway, they could be spreading this. So that it's hard to it's hard to tell whether somebody has it. The diseases that are easier to control are things like smallpox. The smallpox caused such an obvious syndrome that you could just hand out pictures and said, "Have you seen anybody who has this rash?" And they could track the cases of it. And it was also, it didn't make you cough. It was airborne spread, but it didn't make you cough. So the R naught, the basic reproduction rate, was only maybe 2 or 3 people. Whereas measles, it's 18. One person with measles can infect a whole bunch of people. Mm. But one person with smallpox would infect maybe, you know, 1, 2, maybe 3 other people. So it's
what's the reason behind that? Is it because I've heard, like, you know, because this virus will last longer on surfaces, or how airborne it is? What kind of determines, like, how quickly something spreads? What are the factors in that?
There are many variables that go into this. Number one is how strong the virion, an infectious particle of a virus, is called a virion. So the virion is not really alive. It's a thing made by a living cell, but it contains genetic information. In the case of the coronavirus, it's a single strand of RNA. And that's wrapped in some sort of delivery system. Now, these delivery systems form themselves within the cell. So when a cell gets infected by a virus, it picks up that virus, pulls it inside, and then follows the instructions that are encoded in the genes of that virus to make all the different parts of the virus, which then just fall together just because that's the most stable configuration for them to be in. And this is called self-assembly. So a virion, an infectious particle of a virus, is basically a set of molecules that just fell together within the cell that made them, and then is released somehow. So then it carries that genetic information onto other cells. So that's what's happening. So a virus is basically information that the cell uses to make more viruses.
Yeah. Now, this is all, clearly Laura is very smart. I want to switch to a subject which I prefer better, which is idiots. Christian.
Oh, God.
Now, yes. Let me ask you, Christian.
I get talked about it about idiots. That's me.
Yeah, Christian, getting the idiocy going on out there. Christian, I have seen some of the good things out there, and we don't really, uh-huh. I don't want to make light by trying to be positive about this horrific pandemic. But anti-vaxxers seem to have changed their messaging rapidly on social
Honestly,
media.
Honestly,
I can say.
I haven't heard from anti-vaxxers and faith healers. They seem to have disappeared. Maybe somebody's calling them. They went to go answer the phone call. We haven't seen them. But that's a good thing. They need to go away. There was that rally they just had in New Jersey. They stymied some really good legislation. And thankfully, they're fading away. So this might be a death blow to them. That would be a good thing. I mean, anti-vaxxations go back about 200 years. They've been around since the 19th century. The original lie was that, you know, they were going to turn you into a cow because it was a cowpox vaccine. So, I mean, anti-vaxxers, I mean, it's crazy. Last time we talked about conspiracy theorists, they use all kinds of lies, misinformation to spread their agenda. Siobhan was talking about how they use Breitbart as a source to try and swindle people of color into believing their anti-vaccine nonsense. But I was ready to kind of kick around the anti-vaxxers, but I really haven't seen them. They seem to have just evaporated.
Thank you. Wherever they are, I do believe they can stay there.
Let them stay.
It seems, and it's kind of, you know, we bring about South America. And all the horrible, you know, these sanctions. And the big deal is, you know, when there's rampant disease, what do we need to get into these countries?
Yeah.
Vaccines. Yeah. And vaccines.
You got to get vaccines in there. You got to get them the materials.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, it's clear both from history and science that vaccinations and public policy, I mean, these are the things that can really stop the spread alongside you know, our individual responsibility, as Lori talked about, like, you know, washing our hands, using that. I've been putting out, Lori, and I got checked by a doctor online today. Thank you. I was in a little bit of a Facebook argument. I said, well, where do you get your medical degree from? And he's like, Johns Hopkins. I was like, Okay.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
All right. I heard of that place. I heard of them.
Arguments, and every time you take one on the chin, it hurts. My pride got stuck, but I did apologize and took in what he was telling me. And we did actually agree, at the end, we were just kind of both being dicks to each other. It's Facebook.
That's how it goes. That's social media.
Change. I had fun with it. I still don't like them anyway. We've seen the CDC guidelines. Last we checked was, groups of 50, I believe. I don't know if they've gotten more restrictive over the last 24 hours. How do you feel about the current guidelines? Do you think there's things that are maybe not in there that really should be stressed more in the public narrative? I think we're pretty well saturated now with wash your hands, stay 6 feet away from people, don't go anywhere, self-quarantine if you've got symptoms. What else are we missing something?
I think we have to pay attention to who are the people most likely to get sick. And they really have to be isolated. If you have an elderly relative, or if you're of a certain age yourself, you really, really have to be particularly careful about this. Or if you have any underlying immune problems, or if you have an underlying illness, which would put you at higher risk for mortality, you really have to stay away. But the main thing we're focusing on now, the main thing that the public health authorities are worried about now is what they call flattening the curve.
Yeah, that term's gone around a lot now.
Yeah. Now, what that means is there's only so many ventilators to go around. Mm. And I had a lecture to one of my elderly relatives, and I said, look, if there's not enough ventilators to go around. So if you get sick and you need a ventilator, and there's all these people in the hospital who need a ventilator, are they going to give that ventilator to you, or are they going to give it to a 72-year-old as opposed to an 82-year-old? Yeah. I mean, when there's not enough medical equipment to go around, they're going to ration it. It's called triage. The people who are most likely to benefit from it are going to get it, which means that what the public health are really focusing on now is to slow the spread of ideally they'd like to stop it altogether, but given that that's not realistic, at the very least, we can slow it enough that it's the burden of illness stays within the capacity of the hospitals to treat the cases.
Yeah, it's scary times. I want to thank you for being on. We'll be hearing more from you. I appreciate your participation again. Lori Thomas, author of No More Measles. Available at njrevolutionradio.com or commison.com, our new online store. $3.99. It's a downloadable PDF. You're home. You're sitting here in all this chaos. Educate yourself for a second. It's a great book, and we've made it available to you. Christian Perez, your podcast. You didn't mention that you podcast yourself, Modernity.
Yeah, I know. I now that I got all this time off, I should be putting out a couple episodes, but I guess I don't have an excuse right now. That's my podcast, Modernity and Absurdity. Check it out. I was on a recent episode of Wine, Women, and Revolution with Heather. That was a lot of fun. And then I've been on a couple episodes. You can find me on a couple different New Jersey Revolution Radio episodes.
Yeah, if you go in on the new website, we actually just upgraded the website too. It's njrevolutionradio.com. You can go in the little search bar, and if you put up Christian Perez, you'll pop up. You'll pop up there, and at least seven things, eight things. I don't know. There's quite a library right now there, man. And Laura, you've been building one as well. So we appreciate both of your contributions to our network. Thanks for seeing you, and we'll see you again real soon. All right.
Take care. Thanks again.
All right. So you hear the music. I miss my little banter with Diane. I'm trying to message her. She couldn't figure out. She got pop-ups, iPhone problems. I don't know. I'm sorry. I miss you, Diane, if you're watching on the live stream. We'll catch you next week. Don't worry. We're going to have another show. We'll probably still be here at New Jersey Revolution Radio Studios. As soon as we can get back out in the public, we will. But until then, we'll be here every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. live. YouTube, Twitter, Facebook Live. We're looking to do more. We're looking to do more events, hopefully, when things clear up. But we can do all these things because of our sponsors. And we have another sponsor who just came along to the show, but he has sponsored and his shop has sponsored Revolution Radio events before. He's been involved in arts and activism. He's been counseling us on some marketing around here, Dimitri, over at Hub City Smokes, 84 Patterson Street, right there in downtown New Brunswick, right near the Sheriff's Building. Yeah. Right across the street from the Sheriff's Building, where I've had some, you know, we're going to talk about that. I'm going to save that for another show. We're too busy. There's more about my arrest, but we're not going to get into it. Right now, what I need you to do is, if you're in the New Brunswick area, if you're a student, or if you're one of our student fans out of Rutgers, if you're somebody, you know, wherever you're at, you're in New Brunswick, you need some rolling papers, you need a water pipe, you need some vaping supplies, wax, whatever, you know, your traditional head shop type items. Plus, dude is really, really knowledgeable. He is a medical patient. The owner of the shop, Dimitri, is a medical patient. It's really good knowledge about both CBD and THC therapy. So whether you're a medical cannabis patient, whether you vape, whether you need a glass pipe or whatever, stop by Hub City Smokes in downtown New Brunswick. And again, that's 84 Patterson Street. And make sure that when you go into these shops, you let them know that New Jersey Revolution Radio is where you heard of them. We also want to thank the August Agency, QuickBooks, Accounting, and more. Charlie does a great job. He's with the cause. He's an immigrants' rights activist. That's how we met. And that's how we meet most of our sponsors. The people that sponsor New Jersey Revolution Radio are comrades, they're social justice activists. And Charlie himself does the QuickBooks for New Jersey Revolution Radio. We're not good capitalists around here. So it's nice to have a guy keeping an eye on the books. The August Agency can be called at 201-895-8227. www.theaugustagency.biz. I think I see my partner in studio, and I'm very excited. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Oh, boy. We made it. Very excited.
And I'll tell you, I'm going to blame it on the coronavirus. I'm in a very difficult situation with trying to get as close to my router. I think everybody in Garwood at the same time is high. I might be in a nosy area of my house because I have to be sitting next to my router. So I'm going to blame it on the coronavirus because everybody's at home looking up conspiracy theories and fake information about how, you know, elderberry is going to cure the coronavirus. I don't know. But I'm disappointed I missed your first segment.
It was really good. It was really good. And we missed you as well. But, you know, we're here for the second one. And, you know, and I don't think you've met Joe Amditis, but I met Eric Dawson. We had a couple of phone conversations over the last couple of months. He was introduced through Anthony and Newark Water Coalition, hooked us up. So, talked to Eric. Was it Monday morning? I think I was in my shed doing my morning bong hits. And Eric's like, you want to come on the show? I'm like, yeah, sure. And I wind up spending 2 hours on one of the more fun appearances that I've had. Serious topic matter, but engaging and enlightening conversation. So thanks for trading the favor and coming on. Now you saw me panic trying to set up for my show. I saw it. Trying to say it's fun, right? Like
it is fun. Sitting here being able to get up and go get coffee and watch you do all the work.
The mic isn't working. Plug this in. It's fun watching somebody else suffer. A little shouting for it. Yeah. And Diane, do you have the introduction information on our next guest?
Our next two guests, Joe.
Go ahead. You jumped right into it. Usually we're a little more comfortable now, but this is right into the fire with the Diane panel on independent media.
Yep. Yeah, we're all learning tough lessons on how much we really don't know how to use all of these applications. This is hard. We're learning, so we can talk about that too a little bit.
Definitely.
So we have, am I saying your last name correct? Joe Amditis?
Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. Yes, one of the few. Thanks for having me.
Okay, and you are the Associate Director of the Center for Cooperative Media at Montclair State University?
That is correct.
Okay. And we have Eric Dawson of the Eric Dawson Show, talk radio that reaches urban Essex County and broadcasts live on Facebook and YouTube. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So thank you guys so much for joining us. And I guess you missed my missing the first half of the show because of my technology fails. I have two gamers in the basement, so sometimes that affects my ability to have a good signal. And in this crisis, I'm not going to ask them to get off their important competitive games right now because
you don't want to get in the middle of that.
No. So I know you guys both do independent media. Is that correct?
That is correct.
That is right. We at the center, we support independent and local media, specifically in New Jersey. So I don't actually produce media myself, but here to help in any way I can with the rest of them.
Oh, okay. So can you give us a couple of projects you work with or who you're assisting at this time or what types of indie media you're working with and that you assist with?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're a grant-funded organization out of Montclair State, out of the School of Communication and Media. And just to give you a quick example, obviously the coronavirus is a bit of a topic in the media right now at all levels, especially at the local level, though. And so we have been gathering resources, organizing calls. We're trying to raise money to support reporters who are doing this work. And so, stuff like that. We're doing trainings on how to use this kind of technology, which is why I was laughing earlier, because you'd be surprised. PowerPoint is honestly level 3 minimum when it comes to the difficulty. There are a lot of tools out there, and a lot of folks who are used to reporting on a daily basis don't have time always to, look out and learn new technology. So we're there to help with that, money, training, collaboration, all that.
So I guess I'm going to need a tutorial on how all of my systems failed this evening.
Monday at 10:30 a.m. Sign up and.
Oh, is there a class?
There is, on how to use the telecommunication stuff, how to work from home technology, stuff like that.
Oh.
I need to connect with you, Joe.
That's what I'm saying, baby. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, I need to connect with you.
Oh, yeah.
So for myself and our viewers and listeners, where can they tune into to get more information about this?
You can go to centerforcooperativemedia.org. You can also throw in a /programs at the end of that, and you should be able to see our full calendar and everything. But yeah, just go to centerforcooperativemedia.org. And it's two full-time employees. It's myself and our director, Stephanie Murray. And we have a part-time research director. And a couple of other part-time folks. We got an ethnic and community media coordinator, but the website is basically all me, and I'm trying to make it as useful as possible, so I'm open to the feedback. Monday, we're doing weekly trainings, just trying to give folks a spot to vent, talk to each other, ask questions, mm-hmm. figure out what is going on and how do we cover this, because you hate to see it, but things are crazy out there right now.
Yeah, he's been, yeah. And I will say that Joe has been great for New Jersey Revolution Radio. Joe and I, we just mentioned, that we were actually just seeing each other face to face for the first time virtually.
First time.
We've talked on the phone dozens of times, and he has been key. When I'm not a professionally trained journalist, so I've called Joe on a number of occasions with ethical questions, with kind of like, how do I go about researching this story? How do I, if I get a sponsor, how do I note that they've given us money while reporting on a story? I remember that was a really enlightening ethical conversation that we had. Mm-hmm. So Joe is a teacher and an organizer. I mean, really is what he does. Man, he's been there for New Jersey Revolution Radio. Dude gets back to you, whether it be email, text, or phone call. That organization's been a part of NJR from the very start. We thank you, Joe. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
I could not be more flattered. Thank you.
Well, what you do, Joe, is very, very important, because independent media, especially when we look at what's going on now with the coronavirus, we look at how the White House rolled it out and attempted to cover up what was going on. And you look at all of the other corporate media, whether it's on the right or the left, they all have a very specific agenda, which unfortunately doesn't have us at the center in terms of caring about the people. And so to have independent media, folks who are willing to take the time to research and to deliver truth is very, very important. One of the things that I talk about on our show, and I'm sure you've probably discussed this in your class, is the assault on independent media by way of legislation to kind of limit the access that we have, and the amount of access that flows through the internet and the ability for folks to be able to connect with us. And we laugh at on our show, but I got to tell you, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but we did a show today. And we focused heavily on coronavirus. And I know that Facebook, for instance, has set up an algorithm to really pay attention to that conversation that's taking place on their platform. And my show shut down 4 different times. And I watched the streaming. And I have excellent bandwidth here, but I'm watching it and it was dropping from 30 frames per second down to 4 and disconnecting, you see. And you would like to think that, you know, there's no conspiracy, that they're not trying to control what's going on. But it was just very, very difficult for me to accept that.
No, I completely understand that. Even without coronavirus, chaos going on, we get complaints all the time from some of, especially the smaller partners who don't have established legacy credentials, if you will. Basically, it means that they don't have large corporate backers. It's very hard to get to get their attention, somebody at Facebook, and B, you're sort of on the chopping block right away. You see this on YouTube. Their small creators have this problem all the time, yet larger creators will end up on the trending page for things that are clear violations of the terms of service. It's very clear that the people who have the power make the rules on social media. And it's also very clear that they are the only thing they really care about at any level is whether or not certain things upset advertisers or upset the profit bottom line there. So it's going to be very hard to make any case for them to care about you at all unless you have some reason for them to do so. And so one of the things we try to do, and my director deals with this more directly than I do, but we serve as a somewhat go-between to sort of help smaller publications, sort of like the guy at the bar trying to get a drink at a crowded night. Yeah. You sort of stare at them in the eyes.
When you look at the battle for net neutrality, right?
Oh boy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And you talk about these big corporations because at some point you talk about Facebook or YouTube. It's all about revenue. It's all about meeting the
shop. It's all about revenue. Baby. Yeah,
that's absolutely right. And so, me as a small guy, and I remember when Facebook first hit the scene, and people were off ramping from MySpace. If you had 100 friends, I know, right? May it rest in peace. But you know, if you had 100 friends and you posted something, you got 100 likes. Yeah. Right. They didn't have an algorithm that blocked it. But then they realized at some point that sharing all of that content to all of your friends. I mean, I think I have almost 5,000 on my page. It's impossible to do that. And so now everybody's clamoring and climbing to try to get to the top. And so now how do you get to the top becomes the question. And they control the keys to that.
Well, it is unfortunate, and I couldn't help but think that, like, in a couple of years, if not even already, it's going to be the back in my day stories are going to be, you know, before the algorithm when we had, before we had all these bots. But it is true. I mean, the only way to get into that kind of a category is to become the sort of entity that I think would somewhat be conflicting with the sort of sense of independence and not just independence, but hyper and unapologetically local. Right. There's something to be said for organizations that are specifically local and eschew that tendency to or that temptation to want to scale up and become to get to that level, if you will. And so I think probably a better question in the long term to simultaneously dodge your question and also take the bigger framing picture. I think the more important thing would be to try to figure out not how to get to that level, because I don't think necessarily being at that level is where anybody really wants to be. I would much rather see smaller publications, smaller partners work together to create their own, like a new game, essentially, and not only take back the power of, you know, their sort of bully pulpit, if you will, and their position as the often lone local reporter on the ground in communities, mm-hmm. but also to take back their data and no longer hand it over to these large corporations who can do whatever right. they want with it. And so I'd love to see a more cooperative approach from the small publications, because I'll tell you what, if you live in Maplewood or South Orange, if mm-hmm. you live in Newark, if you live in Bayonne or in Jersey City, or there's no large media presence there. Nobody cares right. about you. Yeah. And so, but if all of those publications and reporters that covered those areas banded together and formed their own network, and supported each other in that way, the news would still be produced. People would still need it. They don't care where they have to go.
No,
to
you're
it.
Right. Hyper-local yeah. is the way to go, right?
That's a long-winded way. That's what I'm trying to say.
Here's the thing that that I try to convince my folks of doing, and I want to know from you how that helps. We say hit the share button, right? Mm-hmm. But even hitting the share button, they still control through algorithms the reach you have. You believe yeah. that folks, you know, hitting the share button and pushing that content to their page. I mean, we're told on this end that level of engagement, you know, is wanted by Facebook and is encouraged by Facebook, and they reward you for it. But in fact, that's not the case, is it?
Well, I mean, in many cases, they change the algorithm all the time. I wouldn't be surprised if the algorithm changes the algorithm at this point. But I think the bigger, the goal here, the key here is to not be so directly reliant on Facebook. And I think it's about building a relationship with those readers in multiple places, because
right.
you know, it's about your value to them in many ways. And if you are valuable to them and you don't make it impossible for them to find you, they'll get there. And that's not to say that you avoid the short-term risks of, you know, changing around too much. I mean, that you don't avoid those risks, because it is dangerous to sort of, from a revenue perspective, to sort of jump around to different places, right. you naturally lose people. But in addition, when you're getting throttled on Facebook, and now that net neutrality is no longer a legal entity or, you know, existence or reality, it is important to build those channels in places like email lists, where no one really owns your email. It ends up being sort of your like ID number in many ways, or yeah. everyone's. So if you can start developing those relationships and building it based on your value that you provide to them, as opposed to just sort of like trying to catch them in a drive-by while they're browsing the rest of Facebook, I think you have a much better shot of not only building a sustainable, lasting base of people and support and relationships, but you'll also be able to equip them in different ways and go with them in a sense throughout the rest of the internet and be in their minds in that way, and not just be a sole entity or sort of like a specter haunting Facebook. So my point is, get off Facebook. I know that you're everybody's there, but get off.
My co-hosts keep telling me to do that, man. But the enticement,
set up a bot or post for you and just get off Facebook. Tell everybody you're bailing. Keep the content flowing, but move to a more personal relationship that keeps your data in your hands. That would be my advice.
Diane and I, as middle-aged organizers, take offense to that. Right, Diane.
I was just going to jump in and say, if not Facebook, then, and we're talking about live streaming, you know, these talk type formats. So what platform do we use if we're not using Facebook? I'm assuming the only one is YouTube.
Oh, no, I'll jump in here because, I mean, I've done a lot of platform work, you know, on New Jersey Radio is, you know, you gotta figure out the platforms that work best for both what you want to put out creatively and who you want to reach.
Yeah.
And different segments are on different platforms. You know, if you got to look at, you know, like I said, middle-aged people, there's a little bit of a generational thing that Facebook is kind of how we acclimated to social media, but younger people seem to kind of hop right past Facebook into Instagram and other things. So it's not, I don't think it's a uniform strategy. And as we put forth like our platforms here on New Jersey Revolution Radio, you know, I'm trying to make use of YouTube and trying to focus a little bit more on the podcasting angle, things that are, you know, a little bit more geared towards the audio side. Cause as Eric will know, I fidget a lot and visually I'm distracting. So I want more people listening to me, you know. So that's, you know, I guess the platforms go with what you're doing, you know, you got to customize.
Well, you know, there's the software that I use, and I was pulling it up while you were talking. It gives me a bunch of different options, but most of them are paid. So part of, I think, the challenge is, you know, what you're willing to invest in your broadcast, right? So Facebook is free. Absolutely. YouTube is free. But then, you know, there were other ones like Vimeo, Ustream, and a host of others, but those come with sometimes, you know, pretty pricey price tags. And I guess you, and I'm not even sure there, you know, how much you own your content, what, you know, how you can work. And so the lazy man's way is, and I know one of my co-hosts, Diane, is listening. She's been telling me to bail from Facebook. So she's going to ring my phone when this is over. But, you know, Facebook is the lazy man's or lazy woman's way to try to reach as many people as you can, right? You just kind of throw your net out there and hope you get some fish. You know, but you can, you know, I had a blog at one point and I was doing pretty well with that. But it took a lot more work. And so the level of commitment to do that work and then, you know, to embed video in there. And like you said, Joe, you know, run an email list, try to bring more people in. You just really have a marketing strategy along with being a broadcaster. You literally have to have almost a marketing kind of arm to it to, you know, to get an audience and then the work to keep that audience and keep them engaged.
Which is a great book. It's called The Clue Train Manifesto, and I'm trying to, I think it might even be just a giant PDF. No, it's a book. There we go. The Clue Train Manifesto is by David Weinberger. It's a really good, I think it's from either 1999 or early 2000s, but it's just some of the most prolific and prophetic writing on the way that relationships between content producers, storytellers, and publishers is going to change with the advent and ubiquity of the internet. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about prescient beyond prescient. Very, very. And the reason it's so prescient in many ways is because it draws on basic core tenets of relationships and how people function and how they interact with, you know, everything from direct relationships to parasocial relationships like, you know, a podcaster and a listener, you know, for example. But it talks about the value. Long story short, it's essentially quality over quantity. And that quality is developed not based on the platform that you're on, but based on the way that you interact with those people and those you know, whether they're followers, listeners, you know, viewers, whatever. The goal is to cultivate genuine, authentic relationships and to do so in a way that recognizes the limits of this medium, you know, or whatever medium you're using. We're not asking you to have, you know, coffee with them every morning necessarily, although whatever. But the idea is that you present to them exactly what you say you will. You are authentic in your presentation, and you do so in a way that recognizes that there is a relationship, and it is somewhat transactional, but it's not exploitative and it's not extractive. And if you're not trying to trick people into doing this or catch them or, you know, wave them by, getting those people and focusing on the people who will give you 5 minutes instead of 5 seconds, even if you only get 100 of those and you could have gotten 1,000 of the 5 second viewers, that is a much more lucrative, much more valuable, and much more authentic relationship. And you would be better served to go after those small group of dedicated super participants than you were to go after some sort of casual, you know, filthy casuals just passing by, you know.
So I want to ask, I'll ask Eric first. So we're talking about indie media and any format, podcasts, video streams, whatever. What are the biggest mistakes? Because Eric, you've been at this for a while, correct?
Right. Correct.
How many years?
4 years.
Okay. So yeah, you've built up a following and and use multiple platforms. So what are the biggest mistakes right now that the newbie podcasters, streamers, etc., what do you think the biggest mistakes are that folks are making?
Not being authentic. I think authenticity is key. When Joe is talking about building relationships, you build those relationships through being authentic, through being consistent. You know, for 4 years, I've done this show. And I spoke when we were off air about my battle with cancer. And even through that battle, I brought my listeners in with me, right? When I was diagnosed, I made that a part not in a reality TV kind of way, but you know, it is who I am. And so if I'm talking to you and if you're taking the time to tune in every day for 2 hours, then I owe it to you to talk to you honestly about who it is I am and the place that what I'm talking to you about is coming from. Right. What my whole life experience is as I'm laying this out for you. I think that, you know, a lot of folks, they compartmentalize in a way that leaves their audience kind of disjointed. Right. Not really understanding who they are and how they've arrived at certain things. And look, I've got an audience and a lot of them don't agree with me, but they respect me. And, you know, and they know that, you know, that when I'm on air, I'm not there to sensationalize, you know, I'm there to give real information in a hope to inform, engage and empower them to change their circumstances for the better.
Okay, so maybe some will fall into the needing a shtick.
That's exactly so right. Badly. That's exactly right. You know, and then
see right through it, right?
Yeah. Well, we joke on the show, and yeah. I said to Diane, I said, "Hey, listen, Diane, you know what? To get more likes one day, you should come on the show and just slap me." I said, "And you'll watch it spike." You know, but what do you do next? Strike. Yeah. Yeah, but what's the next thing you do? It reminds me of that Bugs Bunny.
Left.
Remember that Bugs Bunny and Donald Duck, where Donald Duck was drinking the nitroglycerin and then he lit the match and then he blew up and everybody cheered. Yeah. He said, "But I can only do that trick once."
Once.
So, yeah.
I think another thing to lead on this, another mistake everybody makes is honestly they take themselves a little too seriously. And you can always tell when somebody's just so stiff. Right. Yeah, definitely. One show, I can already tell that's not the case. But I mean, seriously, I talk about genuine, you know, authenticity and stuff. It's not taking yourself too seriously, knowing, you know, when you sound like an idiot, and being able to go, oh, stop and go, whoops. Being able to say, I don't know.
No, all right.
This is it. This is the call out episode, baby. Here we go. Being able to stop and say like, whoops, or being able to say, I don't know. For instance, is another one. And then, you know, really, it's just.
And I'm wrong. And I was wrong.
Yeah.
Humble.
Yeah.
Be humble, man. Be humble.
Yeah. Everybody talks. I think people are still, for some reason, talking. Well, I'll wrap up here before we go. But the people are still talking about objectivity in journalism. And we all know it's nonsense that it never existed. But I think what people mean when your average news consumer, when they say objectivity, I think many of them mean principled. They mean they want to see consistency, like you were saying, but they want to see principles. They want to see you showing your work, your ideological work, your research work, your rhetorical work. They want to see how you got there and show that it's a true process. It's a process that they can replicate. It is principled and it's based on something that is authentic, that knows its own position. It doesn't take itself too seriously, and that is real and lasting. It is not just an attempt to extract some, you know, ad revenue or get their data from them. I think you combine that and you have yourself, whatever you're doing, you combine those elements. And honestly, the content is secondary. It is about your ability to provide value and to equip people and to serve them and their basic and critical information needs. Everything else is just fluff.
There you
go. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And yeah, we're really real. You know, I'm sitting here on my couch with the balance my phone with a selfie stick. So
you've done very well. Is that why it's moving? You're on a selfie stick, really?
Yeah, I couldn't get my usual setup at my desk was just not
Please
working.
Please donate to New Jersey Revolution Radio so we can get Diane a tripod. We are definitely going to be home for a few more weeks. Really, it's going to be a couple more virtual shows. We know that most likely. Please, tripods are like $30 or so. Three donors giving us $10. Diane won't have to hold a selfie stick for the show.
Well, I had to move quickly because my laptop was failing, so I didn't have time. So I just grabbed my.
Not MSNBC. Not MSNBC.
What have you noticed?
Hey, Brian,
mainstream media is—they are juggling all sorts of interesting setups because some of them are reporting from home. So I'm just loving that we're all in this this new world of juggling and doing the best we can in a time of crisis, right?
Sometimes I wish I was wrong more often, though, to tell you the truth. Eric.
Amen.
Hey, I didn't want to be ahead of this time. Let's put it that way. You know,
just real quick to your guest who has the book, No More Measles, and I'm going to get that. As we were talking, I saw something pop up in my feed. Two things that I wanted to share. One was they said that the number of cases doubled in New York now within a 24-hour period. That's one. And the second thing is they're now talking about how the virus lives on clothing and the kind of clothing.
Wow.
Well, you have to take the numbers of cases with a grain of salt, because that's like asking you how many mice do you have in your house? You don't know. I mean, how many mice did you catch in your traps? You know, if you put a cat in the house, how many dead mice do you find the following morning? I mean, unless you're systematically testing, then you're not going to get accurate answers. So that's the number of cases that they confirmed.
Right.
So that means that it's here. But if it went up, if it went up because they tested more, that's called ascertainment bias.
By any measure of the imagination, I think just by the lack of testing and understanding how diseases work, these numbers are very, very low in comparison to reality. By any kind of stretch of just kind of applying a little bit of common sense that, you know, the number of tests and how a virus spread, you know, it's crazy. But Eric, how can we find you, man? Make sure people know where you're at.
Hey, check me out. The Eric Dawson Radio Show. You can go and you can find me. I'm going to get off Facebook, Joe. But for now, I'm on Facebook. But you could also subscribe to my YouTube channel. So let me push you there. That is the first step. The first step to recovery is admittance, right?
Diane, who else is here? Joe's got to wrap up. Joe.
Oh, yeah. So you can,
man. Yeah.
Sure. You can find at centerforcooperativemedia.org. We also run collaborativejournalism.org, and I'm on Twitter at JSAMDITAS.
Check them out. New Jersey News Comments. Diane, we didn't get to BS tonight, but we'll catch up more next week. I won't book such a busy show next week.
We didn't get to. We're all muddling through with this coronavirus. I know I'm sad I missed the earlier discussion.
But that's okay.
We're probably going to have more discussions.
You can go.
I just wanted to chime in quick because we are real here. So when Lori and Eric were talking about the testing numbers, in New Jersey right now, you guys all know we don't have accessibility to testing, and they're not testing people who have the standard symptoms. They're only testing you if you had direct contact to somebody who's already been tested, or you came from China, Italy, just back on a trip from China, Italy, Iran, some of the hot zones. So yeah, those test numbers right now are completely irrelevant.
The fact that you're not hearing from the anti-vax people, you know, that they've been very quiet during this, there's a reason for this. They tell you that that pharmaceutical companies sell vaccines that don't work and haven't been tested just to make money. Okay. Notice that there's no pharmaceutical companies selling any coronavirus vaccines at this time. That's because nobody has one that works, and nothing that's been tested. So, I mean, you before you can sell a biological such as a vaccine, it has to exist, and then it has to be shown through testing to be effective and safe. So the fact that this hasn't been done yet just shows that the anti-vaxxers are lying, that vaccines really do have to be tested before they go on the market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
we usually do events. I'll give you all the events. They're all canceled. There's the events.
They're all canceled.
Yep.
They're all online. Be in your virtual room. Stay home. Watch.
This is what we call social distancing, right?
Yeah. Like you put on your show, right? We're all over the state. We're talking. We're getting out.
That's good. That's exactly right.
I was gonna be. I was going to be honored as the person of the year at New Jersey Peace Action's annual dinner, and it's been canceled.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's a great dinner.
Well, thank you. I've been an anti-war activist since I was 5 years old. Yeah. So, and the damn wars are still going on, so obviously I've been ineffective.
We want to thank everybody. New Jersey Revolution Radio is going to stay on top of this the best we can. We're trying to keep good news sources out there. Again, I'm not a doctor. So, you know, I suggest people call your doctor. If you have real questions about your health, call your doctor before you listen to the internet or anything else like that. But educate yourself. Buy no more measles. Commizon.com.
I'm getting it.
9 PDF ebook. Tell your friends. Make a donation. Diane needs a tripod. I need to pay tab.
So they can Diane, I got an extra tripod for you.
There you go. You notice these podcasts take like 3 or 4 days, and that's because I'm tired and I need to rest. I need a staffer to help me edit and put these podcasts out faster. If you give us $10 a month, we can make these things happen. We thank everybody who has already contributed. I mean, it's working here at New Jersey Revolution. We're growing. Wine Women in Revolution. Check out A Journey to Me, a documentary trailer that we're taking donations on to fund our first documentary production. And all kinds of other stuff. If you want to sponsor us, give us a call, give us an email. You can find us. We're pretty easy to find. You can find us on Facebook. Ha ha. We're going to stay on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. Next Wednesday, live at 8 p.m. Until then, this is Brian Powers. And I want to remind all of you that the police can quit their jobs.
And this is Diane. I'm not going to say that I'm going to see you in the streets because I want you to stay in your houses. But I want you to demand of our state governments and federal government that we need tests. We need tests now. We need to follow South Korea's lead of testing, tracking, and treating.
There you go.
Test, track, treat. Demand thanks now.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for inviting me.
Be safe. All right. We'll see you next week.
Take care.